Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with my co-host Tim Henney. This morning we're first joined by John Henry from our local chapter of Toastmasters. We'll talk all about public speaking and more.
And then we're going to talk with Ann Bloomquist and Laurel Bartmess about the Park City Eats and their recent presentation to the Park City School Board regarding what is being served in school lunches.
That's right. This is The Mountain Life, only in Park City, only on KPCW. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for KPCW comes from the Park City Film Studios and Crandall Capital. Now open for business, the studio offers three sound stages, 45,000 square feet of meeting and event space, and dedicated truck and trailer parking, each with its own individual power hookups. Site plan, stage layout, and more at parkcityfilmstudios.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, president of Grand Valley Bank's Park City Branch. We have been part of this community since 1998 as a local town bank. We take pride in giving back by supporting KPCW and many other local nonprofits. We have branches in Heber City, Midway, and Park City on Deer Valley Drive. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Hey, Tim, before we get started today, let's talk about a task force being formed at Park City Municipal. This is all about dogs.
Off-leash dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Designating off-leash areas, on-leash areas.
Right. So this pilot program, which began a couple weeks ago, will run for about 6 months, and it is
through the end of July.
Again, a pilot program, so nothing yet has been determined. But during the time, we're seeing how dog owners behave, how dogs behave, how even mountain bikers behave, and everyone else who's out there using the trails in a multi-use fashion.
And specifically the trails in Round Valley and also the Library Park, which has been designated as an off-leash area also. And this task force is being formed with a number of stakeholder groups, which are listed there, and they include organizations like the Park City Recreation Advisory Board, Mountain Trails Foundation, Summit Land Conservancy, Utah Open Lands, and the task force, Heinrich Dieters from Park City Municipal, who's overseeing this task force and creating it, is looking for 2 to 3 at-large members of the community who have to live inside Park City limits. And the task force will run from beginning probably next week. They're going to have meetings twice a month, and it will run through July 31st. Okay. And it will be delving into all issues pertaining to trail use and off-leash and on-leash dogs.
2 to 3 members. That's it.
2 to 3 at-large members from the community.
All right, and about 6 others.
I think there's
others.
Some flexibility there. If there were many, many applicants and a lot of good people to select from, I think there's some flexibility to that number.
Okay. So applications need to be in by this week.
I think so. I think they're moving pretty quickly on
this. If they're starting next week with meetings. Okay. So take heed. Also, a lot going on in our town. Beginning today, the U.S. Sprint Grand Prix over at Park City Resort with I saw people warming up. I think the qualifying competition begins today in at least half pipe, and all that going on over there, half pipe and slope style at Deer Valley. The qualifiers start tomorrow morning, but we know that Main Street's already closed because why?
There's a big concert at the bottom of Main Street tonight. I think Dawes, D-A-W-E-S, is the band that's playing.
We should look them up, Tim. I'm sure they're awesome. Okay, so always fun. You know, no matter who's playing or if you've ever heard them before, it's always a good time on the bottom of Main Street.
And then tomorrow, I think there are the aerials that go off during the day, and then there's the Stein Erickson Celebration of Life that's happening between noon and 1:30, I believe, at Deer Valley Snow Park area also. So snow parks are going to be very busy. Last night when I went home, it was a little after dark because I was at a RAB meeting, and the champion mogul run was all lit up.
I saw that, too.
It was very exciting to see that.
It is exciting just to see it there. It's very intimidating. Yeah. Good thing we don't have to ski it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's introduce our first guest today. He is the founder of the Park City Toastmasters. And, you know, Toastmasters is best known for promoting effective speaking and communication skills, building self-confidence, all while supporting professional success and fun and personal development. John Henry from Park City Toastmasters joins us to talk about Toastmasters and what you do there and how it can expand your entire world, and also to talk about this upcoming event on February 13th and how you can get involved or at least come and enjoy and learn from the event. So good morning to you,
John. Or you and I could just keep talking and see if John, the Toastmaster, can break his way into this conversation.
I could try and do that. Good morning, Tim and Lynn. Glad to be here.
Oh, we're glad to have you. We always like to go back to Toastmasters. I do anyway, because I think it's a great group, and it has done an extreme amount of good for a lot of people. So talk about why you decided to found this group, what, 15 years ago, maybe more?
Yeah, this will be year number 16, started in 2000. So the funny story is I knew nothing about Toastmasters, and I had a good friend who knew that I wanted to get involved in the community. And he knew nothing about Toastmasters, but he said, why don't you start a Toastmasters club? I don't even know what that is. So I looked into it and found out more about it. It was about public speaking. I had a lot of public speaking experience, but figured everyone needs, you know, a chance to improve and work on their skills. So I started it. And here we are 16 years later with the most vibrant club in Utah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's been a whole lot of fun. And we've helped a lot of people.
Did you say that you had public speaking experience?
Yes.
And what was that background?
I used to be a pastor, so I was talking to people on a weekly basis at least 2 to 3 times.
That's interesting, because I know in this state of Utah, with the prevalent LDS faith, that there's a lot of public speaking that goes on. I know kids
exactly.
are raised public speaking in the religion and in the church.
Right.
And they kind of come into adulthood very comfortable with public speaking.
Or not.
Or maybe not, but yeah, they decide it either works or it doesn't.
Yeah, you know, I read once that the number one reason that people don't advance in their workplace is lack of public speaking
right.
skills, or poor public speaking skills. And I think it's so interesting. And when people hear the word Toastmasters, I think they actually think, oh, it's about making toast. And if you think about it, giving a toast at an important event like your best friend's
right.
wedding
right.
is very, very daunting. So it actually is a good place to start, isn't it?
Yeah. When I was looking into Toastmasters, I immediately thought of Dean Martin and the old roast they used to do. And I thought, well, I don't even know what this is about. And what am I getting into? But I found that Toastmasters, there's two analogies I'd like to make. One is it's like being a professional musician. There's a lot of people who have experience public speaking, and they would say, oh, I'm fine. I don't need any help. And that's ridiculous. Of course you need help. The professional musician always goes back to the fundamental skills that he started with. He or she started with, they're doing the scales that they learned when they first started. And they do that because it's fundamental to their skills. If they're going to stay at their level, they have to keep going back to these skills and these practices. It's the same with public speaking. You can't just rest on your laurels and say, well, I've done that, I have all this experience. You have to go back to the fundamentals and keep working on them to stay sharp and to make improvements.
Yeah.
And there must be a benefit to doing it in person also, having your meetings as opposed to doing it online or practicing in front of the mirror.
Absolutely.
It seems like this would be perfect for online tutorials, but I've got to believe that sitting in a room with your peers and, you know, supporting each other and critiquing each other has tremendous
Absolutely.
Benefit.
Absolutely. That's really the crux of what Toastmasters is about, especially of our club. Lynn, you know this, that when you give a speech, you get an evaluation. And it's an evaluation not to tear you down, but to give you some positive input in what you did right, because sometimes we don't always know what we're doing right. And also some really helpful practical suggestions. Hey, I think you should consider doing this, you know, with your voice, you're pitchy, or, you know, you need to have more pitch, you need to be louder, whatever it might be, to make people aware, this is what I need to work on. And that's the real crux of it, because we can just getting up and talking isn't going to make you better. You have to get some input.
Has Lynn ever gotten a first place or a medal at Toastmasters? Because I know she likes those.
You know what? I just found a plaque in my closet.
Oh, there we go.
And it was, I was the division president, and I won division president of the year. How about that?
You mean area.
Oh, area. Yeah. Okay, sorry. Whatever. Yeah, was it the area president?
It was area.
Okay, thanks, John.
Be honest.
Yes. Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned competition and winning prizes at Toastmasters, because every Tuesday morning there are winners, and it's funny because it gets you over that sort of fear of competition or fear of rejection or loss or right. any of that, because there's always a winner for the best speech, always a winner for the best table topics, which is impromptu extemporaneous speaking, and best evaluation.
Right.
So there are a lot of prizes given out. I have more than just one plaque.
And best introduction now, we've added that. And
oh, right.
most improved. Because people like awards, you know, like to be recognized. Hey, I put some effort into this and I'm getting recognized.
Some people more than others. Now, what time in the morning do these meetings start? Because I've been tempted, and then my recollection, which fails me most of the time these days, is that it starts really early in the morning, and you always lose me right around the 6 right. o'clock thing.
7 a.m.
7 a.m.
That's late.
Every Tuesday morning, 7 a.m. to 8:15.
One of the things, John Henry, that I always valued from you so much at Toastmasters was your ability to cut out extraneous language. What are some of the things that people do? We know that there are the ahs and the ums, but what are the other things that people do? There's all this language we use
right.
that is fat. You can trim the fat.
Right. I think a common mistake people make is they don't have a really clear purpose or outline to their message, and so they ramble and wander, and you can listen to that and go, I have no idea what your point is. What are you talking about? What is your main point? Or I don't know where you're going with this. You know, some people, they like to just get up there and they think it's going to come together somehow magically, but it's really helpful to what I did as a preacher, and I still do to this day. If I can't say my speech in one sentence, I'm not ready. I'm not prepared to give that speech because I don't know what it's about. And I can't articulate it in one sentence. So I think that's a common error people make, is they haven't boiled it down. And that's hard to do. We have a lot of great ideas, but can you boil it down to one sentence?
That's kind of a communication skill that's writing related also. I mean, good
exactly.
writing begins with your opening statement, and
right.
then everything else supports and reflects back to that opening
right.
statement.
And good writers often make really good public speakers once they get past some of the fears. Because they're wordsmiths and they have great language skills.
Mm. Let's see. So I didn't know what my point was going to be, so I just threw in a few filler words. Well, it is interesting, and just going back to individual words,
right.
the number of times when we are speaking along and we use words like and so. But it is amazing when you take those words out, you don't change the meaning. Talk about things like that, elements like that in Toastmasters.
The superfluous
yeah.
parts of speech. I always nab people on the phrase, I think. I said it earlier, I recall. But it's something we gravitate to as just almost like a buffer. Like, I don't want to be too strong in what I'm saying. So we say, I think this is the answer. And you'll hear that public speaking and politicians are always saying, you don't need to use that phrase. You're telling us what you think. And just to back away from that, instead of saying, I think we should have more dogs on leashes versus we should have more dogs on leashes. It's so much more powerful. And we're not creating that little buffer of, it's like a safeguard of being too aggressive in our language.
Hmm. I like that.
Yeah. That's an interesting one because I'm on city council, and so I find myself expressing things that there's a fine line that I have to walk, because as an elected, I mean, this is a little bit off topic, but as an elected official, I'm representing a constituent. And so I might have a personal preference, which right. I could express without the I think in front of it,
right.
as long as I stated, this is my personal preference, right. but I'm doing the same thing. That's right. a qualifier.
Right.
I'm not speaking for all of council. I'm not speaking for the entire community. This is my personal preference. Right. And without stating that, I feel uncomfortable.
Right.
So there, you know, because I am, I might have my personal preference, which might not align perfectly with the community, and I'm always willing to be informed and adjust my position based upon the input that I get. And that's why it gets into that, I think, right. or at this point in time, or at this point in the process. So I find those qualifiers to be very helpful.
Right. I think you have an exception to the rule.
Because
I do.
Because being on council?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
You have mm-hmm. to distinguish between your ideas and who you're representing. That's valid.
Mm.
For sure.
So there are other things we do. We start off by saying, I'd like to welcome John Henry right. to our show. How about just we welcome John Henry to our show? All these extraneous things that we say mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. What are some other good ones that you try to eradicate?
We try to nail down the so's, because we use it often to connect sentences and really just extend them indefinitely. And and the word and is used as well to just be succinct in what we're going to say. And don't be afraid of ending a sentence and ending a thought and then going on.
And don't be afraid of a pause. Talk about the use of pause in your public speaking.
Pause is a hard one for people to grab onto. We're afraid. For some reason, we're afraid of that pregnant pause to allow people to process. And we're afraid that we're going to lose them. We're afraid it communicates that we've lost our way. We don't know what we're talking about. When in fact, most of the time, it has the opposite effect. If we maintain our composure, we can say something that's powerful.
And draw the audience in
nice
a little
pause.
Deeper.
That's right. I was on the edge. It's exactly. a little harder to do in radio. People go, wait a minute, there's dead air.
Well,
what happened?
I have a pet peeve, or a number of pet peeve terms, but they're phrases. And one of them is when people finish a statement and say, do you know what I mean?
Do you know?
Right.
Do you know?
Do you know? Know what I mean? It's the know what I mean. And some people use that throughout an entire conversation, and you'll hear it five, maybe 10 times, and it's like, wow, that hurts.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Do you say that after they say it each time? Ouch, ouch.
And that's the benefit of having the grammarian role in our club, that person should be listening to those kind of phrases and helping us clean up our sentences and make them more succinct and direct.
Mm-hmm. So you've got coming up a week from Saturday, mm-hmm. A Toastmasters training, but you're highlighting several speakers and you're inviting the public to
right.
come to this.
We're taking something that, as you know, Lynn, is often terrible, a Toastmaster training, and making it really good. So this is a simultaneous event. There will be trainings for Toastmaster specifically, but there will also be workshops and a keynote that's applicable to the general public. And we're opening it up, making it bigger, providing free breakfast, bringing in people who are really good communicators, people who can facilitate a discussion, and opening up as a taste of Toastmasters, or even a taste of public speaking. My other analogy is kale.
Kale.
Who gets excited about kale? You may, but I don't. I think of kale.
I do a little. I'll put my hand halfway up.
All right, halfway. But raw kale, I don't think
not
anybody's
so exciting.
Getting excited
nope.
about. We're like, ooh, distasteful. I'm going to stay away.
I put
from
it in my green smoothie.
Well, okay, you blend it up with
right.
something tastier.
But it's not by itself, okay? So we do stuff to make kale good for us. We change the taste of it so it's good to our palate.
Put a pound of salt on it.
Right.
Tastes pretty darn
right.
good.
Or you bake it with some olive oil. Make
a lot of
chips.
Olive oil.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's all these strategies to make kale pleasant because we know it's so good for us. Same thing with public speaking. We know public speaking can be really good for us, but it's got a bad taste in our mouth for a lot of us. We think of kale and we go, oh, I don't want to do that. But this is putting a pleasant spin on it. It's a free event. It's going to be an introductory thing. We make no claim that you come to this and your public speaking concerns are all taken care of. That's not true. It's a taste. It's a taste of it. And to learn from people who have experience and skills and to sit in and get a feel for it and come away with some good strategies, some good ideas to improve your public speaking. And that's our purpose. We really want to open it up and make it palatable, like kale.
Is there a master template that you use for Toastmasters? The national organization, do they say, hey, John, you're going to open up a chapter. That's terrific, 15
right.
years ago or 16 years right. ago. Here's a bunch of help. Or do they just say, hey, knock yourself out and let us know how it goes?
Yes, there is a template. Every Toastmaster meeting has three main components, and they're all, you go to any Toastmasters club, they're going to have these three components: prepared speeches, table topics, which is impromptu speaking, and then evaluation. So we have that template for our meetings. This event coming up on the 13th is not that. This is a keynote and a couple workshops that you can choose from.
Who's your keynote speaker?
Stacy Demolsky.
Oh,
and we're all
great
familiar
speaker.
With Stacy. Mm-hmm. Stacy was a stand-up comedian. She's an author. She's a coach. She's a jack of all trades when it comes to public speaking. And she is also was a semifinalist in the Toastmaster International Speech Contest. That's the big daddy of speech contests with Toastmasters. If you win that one, you're effectively
the world's best
public speaker. And she got into the semifinals, which is a really big deal.
Wow.
And she proved to be, her skills, that her skills got her to that level. And so she's our keynote. She's talking about everything we want is on the other side of fear.
That's a great topic. Great topic. And then so if you have been curious about Toastmasters, you want to show up, are you going to be asked to speak?
No.
No. But can you volunteer to speak? Are there, table topics you can give it a shot?
We're not taking that approach with this event. This is workshops. Now, there may be interaction in the individual workshops. I can't attest to what each facilitator is going to do. But they will be talking about just the workshops we're having for the public. Presenting yourself professionally with Sue Ann Kern. She's a social media expert. There's Power Your Presentations Through Impact and Action with Mark Blachar. He is the director of presentations for USANA Health Services in Salt Lake. And then Planning for Success, How Practice Leads to Mastery is done by Jill Martin. And she's a local ski guide, yoga instructor, and wellness coach. She's a new to Toastmasters.
Great.
And she wins best speaker on a regular basis as a newbie, but it's because of the experience we're giving her. She would attest to this, that it's really helped her to grow her public speaking skills. She's got something to offer, and I think
is that Jill Martin that we've interviewed? No. Okay.
Our newest one of the two. Oh, no, both of our new city council members, I'd say, got their public speaking start at Park City Toastmasters.
Becca Gerber and
Nan Worrell.
Nan Worrell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I think Becca is a current member. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's great. What a wonderful group.
Well, John, have you visited other Toastmaster chapters within the state? Because
yes.
You said this is the most vibrant within
Absolutely.
Our state. And why is that? Why is Park City so vibrant?
There are multiple reasons. The first one is the demographic. People live in Park City because they want to live in Park City. By nature, they're driven. And they're interested in self-improvement. That's why this event and our Toastmasters Club is a great opportunity for this demographic. People are drawn to it, and so I think that attributes to a lot of why our club is so successful.
It's a week from Saturday.
Yep.
Where and when?
8:30 to 11:30 at the Park City Library.
Okay, up in the community room on the top floor?
We're going to start in the Santee community room area, and we'll obviously have workshops in different rooms, and we have free breakfast catered in, and we'd love to have people there.
Sounds great. Saturday, February 13th, 8:30 to 11:30.
11:30, then go to pctoastmasters.com to get more information and to register.
Okay. John Henry, pleasure to see you.
Good to see you.
And we'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts with Park City Medical Center, a not-for-profit community hospital and a proud supporter of KPCW. At Park City Medical Center, our OBGYNs use the latest surgical advances, like minimally invasive hysterectomies, endometrial ablation, and laparoscopic procedures. Even better, they also offer the convenience of having your procedure close to home. Doctors Jeannie Falk, Lorraine Sabella, and Jeremy Clark are the only OBGYNs who practice surgery and deliver right here in Park City. Make an appointment today by calling 435-658-7400.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. We're just speaking with John Henry from the Park City Toastmasters Group. Again, that Toastmasters, a taste of Toastmasters taking place Saturday, February 13th, 8:30 a.m. at the Park City Library. Well, representatives from the Park City Eats group presented before the Park City School Board on January 19th, asking that school lunches eliminate the sinister seven ingredients from school lunches. We're joined by Ann Bloomquist and Laurel Bartmus for a recap and follow up on that meeting. And they'll tell us what we can look forward to in this continued effort. Laurel and Ann, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you, Lynn.
Let's just start off with maybe a recap of a couple of weeks ago. You had a lot of representatives, people in the community that are interested in health and nutrition and diet, and a lot of people who are incredible experts in the field come and speak before the Park City School Board. And you also heard from the Child Nutrition Services Director, Elizabeth Strasser. So, Anne, maybe you could just start with a recap of what you did quickly, and then we'll go from there.
Well, our goal was to get a community grassroots effort to rally around the idea that we have to change the school food program. And so we did a Hungry for Healthy campaign where we had a change.org petition. We did a survey of the parents, and we asked everybody to come out and tell the school board what they see and what their children are eating in the school. And we also had doctors, dietitians, nutritionists to back up our claims that what we feed our kids really impacts their brain development, which impacts so many things in life, but especially like what we talk about, the achievement gap, children's ability to learn, and really what we feed them and how we feed their brains really impacts that. It also impacts their behavior in class. You feed them sugar in the morning, they go in, they're all hyped up, they crash an hour later. They're not sitting there in their best capacity to learn. And that's what we're all about. We want the kids to be the best healthy kids that they can be to learn. And then there's longer term impacts as well. And it's become a national known thing of childhood obesity and how our food has changed in this country to the point where you can barely eat anything that doesn't have sugar in it anymore. And we're all addicted to sugar, and it's causing diabetes and heart disease and all different types of bad health experiences as you age. So we need to teach the kids how to eat while they're young and keep those healthy habits through the rest of their lives. Research shows that the most important time is from the time they're born till about 5 or 6 years old. So that's your preschool, your kindergarten, your first grade. These are critical times to teach kids and to get into kids' palates and their bodies of good, nutritious food that will last them their whole lives.
And so if we are serving them at school, mm-hmm. in many cases breakfast, but lunch, and we're serving them food that comes in a can or in a package, pre-cooked, you just microwave it to heat it up and serve it, we aren't expanding their palates, and we're not teaching them good, sound nutrition. And Laurel, let's bring you in. You were a former health teacher, and you're now a restaurateur. And when you spoke at the school board meeting, you talked about something that you had done where I think you were preparing meals in the school maybe once a week. Talk about what you did.
So I worked with Eats a little bit for about a year, and we were able to go into Trailside, and once a week we did a scratch cooking lunch program, and the kitchen was all on board, and it was hard, but not that hard, I guess. The ladies were willing to do it and lovely about it, but we had to couple it with promotion. So I would go in the morning of, or actually the day before, and say, "Kids, this is our option. We've got the scratch cooking, and we've got this like option A, option B. This is why we should eat option A. It's home cooked. It's got this in it. This is good for us. I'll be there to eat lunch with you." And then I would show up, and then the next morning I'd do it again on announcements. Go in. The kids adored it. I mean, they adored it. They were so proud of themselves. The lunch counts went up. I mean, we could. The data's all there. Kids, they primarily took the scratch lunch option, but it was coupled with this promotion as well. And so that argument of we can prepare healthy foods, but the kids are going to toss it, you know, it's about educating. It's about inspiring the kids. They're savvy anyway. They kind of know what they're eating. And, you know, I don't think it seems like they're not too impressed by it. But at the same time, it's what adults are feeding them. And they do, like Ann says, they get used to it. And yeah, it's easy. And it's some of it's fast foodish, some of it's not. But we can do better. I mean, we can do better. And we've just got to get that buy-in that it's possible. And then let's figure out how to do it. The kids will respond.
Laurel, you just described the options, the scratch option and option B. What is that option that the kids are getting right now? Can you describe it? Because in my mind, you know, I have this vision of what might be being served to our children in our schools, but I don't really know what, I don't know the reality of that.
Yeah. Well, so for example, because I would give them the options when I would do the morning announcements with the other kids, and usually would be the scratch option, which, like, say they did homemade lasagna one time, which was great. They browned off the meat, cooked it, put it together, very nice. And so that was like the scratch cooking option. And then another option might be a sun butter sandwich, right, which is sunflower seeds on a whole grain, or like sunflower seed. It's a replacement for peanut butter. But anyway, it's on whole grain bread. And there was fruit available. I have to say there are some healthy options there, but they're kind of few and far between, and they're not really that seasonal. So people, I mean, the kids don't really, I don't know. It's,
well, another option would be like chicken nuggets.
Right. So there's like, yeah.
So you'd have a chicken nugget which when one of the moms described it at the school board meeting the other week as junk food.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, our chicken nuggets in our school are a whole piece chicken with whole wheat breading, and they're baked, not fried. But a kid doesn't know the difference between a chicken McNugget from McDonald's and a chicken nugget coming from the school. So we're not teaching them any difference in what their choices would be, because they wouldn't know the difference between those two nuggets, right? So one of the things we want to give kids is things that aren't what you would consider junk food, you know, not that treat food, but a regular meal every day. So when we talk about choices, we want all the choices to be good choices. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so what would your ideal list of choices include to be replacing what is currently on, you know, as they walk through with their lunch trays and pick things off? What would you like to see replace those items?
It would be easier to say what I wouldn't want to see there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and that would be like the junk food items, you know, like mini corn dogs, what some would describe to me as circus food. you know, things that you would go to a fast food stand and buy.
Right. Or raisins. Like once I was there and the option, it was a side, it was raisins, but they were covered in sugar. And a sour kind of, I mean, it was like candy, basically. I had kids hold up a carton of chocolate milk and say, "Is this healthy?" Like, they were looking to me saying, you know, or sometimes they would open their backpack and start pulling out stuff. Is this okay? Like, chips and things like that. So they're hungry to learn more about what they're eating and if they should be eating it. But I kind of feel like I don't think we need three choices. So I think a lot of the pushback from the people that actually have to make these meals is it seems kind of scary and hard when you have three options that they're feeling like they have to put out there. If we could just have one quality lunch, and even, I mean, let's experiment at a school. Let's see how it goes. Let's feed one quality lunch and get the kids excited to eat it. I just always challenged them. I said, you guys are smart. You know the difference. So let's just make the right choice. And kids, they took the challenge.
It seems to me like there's this pervasive belief among maybe those who serve up these meals in the schools that you have to either add, you know, food coloring to it or sugar to it, like the sugar-coated raisins. I mean, that is... It's something that's so natural, right, and so naturally sweet. And there is this belief that, oh, no, you have to put more sugar on it or kids won't eat it. You have to turn the applesauce blue or kids won't eat it. And I find that really disturbing. And it's one of the things at that school board meeting that I found to be discouraging, actually, is that we were hearing that, well, if we serve them healthy food, they won't eat it. And part of it is that I believe that there needs to be a whole, you know, maybe scrapping of the entire program and starting over from scratch, as you say, scratch cooking, scratch nutrition program, where healthy food is also delicious. I mean, I'm the first to say that if someone just puts a plate of kale in front of me with maybe some lemon juice on it, I probably won't eat it. Mm-hmm. But if you put kale in, as I'm sure all of you know how to do in the way you feed your families, it's delicious and we're still getting that same nutrition. So I don't know what my question is really. Have other school districts completely scrapped their programs and started over? And if so, what does it look like? Anne, that's probably a good question for you.
Actually, I was just in a meeting about an hour ago where a mom just moved here from Colorado, and the school that they were in, this exact thing happened. She said a local restaurant chef's kids were in the school, and he took a look at the program and said, this has got to change. I'm going to do it. I'm going to change it. And he went in and revamped the whole thing, all new menus. He would come into the lunchroom every day and talk to the kids about what the new menu was. They actually put tablecloths on their tables and had real silverware and real plates. And she said, my daughter, who never would eat school lunch before, came home and begged me. She goes, I have to eat school lunch now. And the mom went and checked it out. I'm like, well, yeah, of course you do. So yes, I mean, there are school districts that are doing this, and it's really, can you imagine this community rising up if we just came out and said, boom, here's a whole new menu with quality ingredients that we're making on site. This community would, no pun intended, eat that up. Yeah. You know, it would just resonate with the way that our lifestyle is here. And one of the pushbacks I got was a meeting with several different people there was, well, we have to keep in mind who the federal program, school program is for. It's for the underserved population. People can't afford things. And they said, you have to feed them things that they will eat. I said, wait a second. I think we got a win-win here. Why wouldn't they eat good food that tastes good and it doesn't have to be the junk food? I didn't understand what that person was coming from with that comment because I thought, well, no, if it's good food, everybody's going to eat it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Well, they may not be getting that at home, but they should be getting that at school.
Right.
And that question might be trying to drill down into the funding aspects of food and the lunch program. And can you delve into that a little bit and explain?
Yeah, let me explain that a little bit because I think that's pretty interesting because a lot of people don't know that the school nutrition program is a standalone program within the school district. No tax dollars, none of Park City's tax dollars go into that system. It's like a standalone restaurant, let's say. And it's funded three ways. It's funded from the federal reimbursement program. We get some state funding from a liquor tax and then people who actually buy school lunch. And for those people who are in lower income, they are eligible for what's called the free and reduced program. And if you're on the free and reduced program, the government will give the school district or the nutrition services department $3.09 for a lunch. To give a comparison of that, if you buy an elementary school lunch in Park City today, it's only $2. So a lot of people think that the paid people are supplementing the unpaid people, and it's actually the opposite.
Right.
That we get more money for the free and reduced than we don't. And I've talked to lots of parents about, I'd be willing to pay $3 if I thought it was a great meal. I mean, you can't really make a home lunch for less than $3.
Right.
So again, it's a win-win. If we could get the food up to the quality people want to pay $3 for, the people who are on the free and reduced are going to get that great food as well. And they're already paid for.
Yeah.
Well, and since the food services is a standalone, are they still under the umbrella of the school board? I mean, I know they're in the school district, they're part of the school, but because they're funded separately, where does the involvement of the school board giving direction, and because they don't hold the purse strings necessarily, isn't there a disconnect there?
No, they still fall under the school district. And if there are things like capital equipment, that would come from the school board. And then it is its own entity, and they do approve the budget. So the school board approves the budget for the child nutrition services. When it runs in the red, then those funds may need to come out of the general fund. However, at this point, we still have a slush fund in the child nutrition service department for back from the days when we made money on the program. So we used to make some money and put that money away for a rainy day type of thing. The past 5 years, we've been losing money on the program. This past year, we just broke even, made a little bit of money. So it's and that's partly a function of participation as well. Our participation is down to 38% district-wide, whereas it has been, you know, upwards of 60% in the past. So again,
Laurel, what was the participation when you were doing the trailside lunches, and what are some of the levels of participation among, you know, schools like the one that you're talking about, Anne, in Colorado?
I'm gonna let Anne. Do you remember what those numbers ended up being?
I do. Actually, I do because I had to look this up. On the days when we had the scratch cooking, we actually had a 12% increase on those Tuesdays. By having the promotion aspect of it, because then the parents knew about it as well, and then they would want to buy it, and the kids wanted to buy it as well. So, we only did it 4 months.
Right. Yeah.
So, and people didn't know about it that much until it got going. So, 12%, I think, is pretty light.
Do they still promote the next day's lunch menu on the daily announcements? Because I think when I was in elementary school, I think I heard that. That just rang a bell with me. I was like, you know, part of the announcements was tomorrow's lunch will be.
They do.
And you could decide.
Trailside, they just did it day of. It's like today for lunch, we're having a cheese stick yogurt and a muffin or lasagna or chicken nuggets.
But when you came in, there was a pre-promotion of the following day for the scratch meal.
Because you would do that. So I'd say tomorrow, this is our
option. Maybe that's something that could be worked with. Because I think as a kid, I remember knowing what was coming the next day. Mm-hmm. Or if I paid attention, I would have been knowing. And I could go home and say, you know, I don't want you to make a lunch today. I don't want to take a lunch. I want to buy a lunch because we're having lasagna and I love lasagna.
They do have a school lunch calendar that the kids...
Right.
So every month my daughter brings home a calendar that has it outlined, or you can check online as well.
So what about those school districts? We always hear about the ones in Vermont, Boulder. I mean, are they serving organic food? Is it farm to school? Is it all just made from scratch and not organic? What do we want to achieve here? Because I hear that money thing, the $2, even the $3. Think about what we spend on lunch when we go have lunch. It's like 3 or 4 times that. I mean, I would be so willing to pay $5. It seems like a bargain for a healthy lunch that my child will eat.
And give up one latte.
Yeah, exactly. What do we pay for a latte?
Yeah.
Yes.
We have to be sensitive, though, because we've got a range of income levels. And if you've got 4 kids in school and your mom and dad are both working and you're working to make ends meet and you're not on the free and reduced, you know, there's that gap of people too. So we need to be sensitive to that. Not everybody in Park City could afford a $5 lunch every day. So I'm sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. We have to make it reasonable. We have to make it so it's affordable for everyone. And there are creative ways to do that as well.
Right.
I mean, because there is money in Park City, I think you could do some outside funding sources to help that gap area. Or one mom said to me today in this same meeting, she goes, I'd be willing to pay that and I would supplement somebody else's.
That's how I feel. I'd pay the $5 for the $3 lunch and help subsidize someone else.
Right. So we need to be creative.
I think we have, and I think we really have the resources and support in the community. I think what, you know, it comes down to is the leadership. And if the people that are in the leadership positions that are making the decisions, who are taking care of our lunch ladies, have they bought in? Do they think it needs to change? Because if they don't think it needs to change, then how are our lunch ladies ever going to change it? Is my question, I guess.
And is that leadership in food services or leadership at the school district level, the board level?
I think there are all those levels. So, I mean, it's however you want to arrange it in your head. But there's these levels of leadership going on in the district. And somebody, I mean, there are lots of people that are like in the district that are like, yes, it needs to change. But are those the people that are the key people that need to make it happen? And if they're not, if they don't have this belief like we do in the room, like, boy, we have this great community and it's, you know, we're past due to just get this done. If those leaders that are leading the people that are leading our lunch ladies aren't really leading, if they're just saying, I don't know. If they're not leading and if they haven't bought in, then our lunch ladies, they can't do it. They need a leader. I mean, it all goes back to leadership.
Well, that's where you scrap the whole program and start over.
But I thought I heard in the interviews that you did on KPCW as a follow-up, a lot of positive comments from a school district board members.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to say that I felt that we had a lot of support from the school board
members.
And that they're the ones who really took it to task and said, hey, you know, I don't like seeing these things in the schools. And they charged the business manager, Todd Hober, and Child Nutrition Services to come up with a plan to make this change. And they said on the May 3rd meeting coming up, they'll have a 3-year plan. And I just met with Todd Hober about an hour ago today, and I was very pleased that he's going to head up putting a task force together in the next week or two, and from all different areas, not just EATS and Child Nutrition Services, but to get some of these other stakeholders involved. And so to have a Latino parent there, to have a student there, to have a nutritionist there, dietitian there, suppliers there, to have all the stakeholders at the table to create what the vision should be. Because we're one organization saying what we want our vision to be, but there are other stakeholders that whose voices should be heard as well. And so we're all going to come together, say, where do we want to be in 3 years, and then work backwards from there. So because they could come together with a plan by May 3rd, but if it's not towards the vision we all want to see, then the plan doesn't make any sense. So I was very happy to hear that Todd was going to head that up.
So we wanted to mention one of the things that you were working towards is that eliminating the 7 ingredients out of food. And so this would be one of the first things. And it's things like trans fats and artificial colors and flavoring and high fructose corn syrup, 7 of them. Mm-hmm. What did I miss?
Dyes, artificial preservatives, artificial colors, artificial.
Anything artificial that makes it not a whole food, basically.
Yeah, and the reason we went with that campaign is because we were talking before is there are, you could debate the definition of scratch cooking till you're blue in the face. You could debate what's healthy. Is if you follow USDA guidelines, technically that's a healthy diet. But is that really the diet that we want? Because then you can still have blue applesauce. You can still have sugary cereals for breakfast. And
yeah, isn't the food pyramid always like 30 years behind?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. And always changing.
And always changing, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So we're about out of time, but you do have an event coming up next week on Thursday, February 11th, I think in conjunction with the Park City Film Series.
Yes.
So why don't you talk about that?
Yes, we're very excited to be screening the series of shorts called Lunch, Love, Community. And it's the story of how Berkeley, California's community came together to do the very thing we're trying to do here. They started in 1999, so they've been at this for 16 years now, and they've done a lot. So we can learn so much from them. But it goes through the evolution of how the community came together, what the parents wanted, the fact that the superintendent was not bought in at the beginning and then came around and is like one of the biggest proponents now, how they brought in Chef Ann Cooper and did exactly what you're talking about, just revamped the whole thing, just said, nope, we're not going to serve this crap anymore. We're going to serve good food. And it's just an inspiring series of how this happened. It's only 42 minutes of screen time. Then we'll have a panel afterwards, which Lynn is going to facilitate for us. And we'll talk about how we can make that happen here.
Great. And quickly, we forgot, we didn't forget, but Laurel, I wanted to ask you, you are a restaurateur and you have a new restaurant that you opened in Woodland, of all places, maybe about a year ago, right?
7 months.
Okay, quickly tell us about that.
So it's just been a dream for a number of years, probably, I think, 12. It's there, this dream to open. I love food. I love people enjoying good food, whole food. And I found this building in Woodland, and I couldn't say no to it. It was one of the first spaces I'd been in where I was like, this is the right space for me. And speaking to your kale comment, I have to say, kale is amazingly cheap. And when just thrown on the grill with some salt and pepper, people were eating it up today. So it can be done in our schools. And it's our kids deserve it. It's the right thing to do for them. And I think people just need to get really creative and just start doing that hard work. And yeah.
That sounds great. So again, it's the Woodland Biscuit Company.
Yep.
Right there on the main drag, the old Woodland Cash Store.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So Highway 35, you just have to go east of Francis. It's about 30 minutes from Park City.
Yeah. It's a great drive, though. It's just a beautiful drive out there, and you have a wonderful lunch when you get there, breakfast.
It's also
fabulous.
A nice bike ride.
Yeah,
it's been known as the biscuit ride by some.
Love it.
That's great. Okay, well, Laurel Bartmus and Ann Bloomquist of Eats and General Interest Sake for Our Kids Nutrition, thank you so much for joining us today on The Mountain Life.
Thank you for having us.
And we also want to thank John Henry of the Park City Toastmasters for joining us in the first half of the hour, and then Laurel Bartmus and Ann Bloomquist again of Eats. And let's thank our underwriters.
The doctors at the Park City Specialty Clinic, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Grand Valley Bank and Heber Valley Bank, Park Meadows Country Club, and Park City Mountain Resort.
And we'll be right back after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Josh Carr here, Membership Director at Park Meadows Country Club, sponsor of KPCW. Park Meadows offers an 18-hole Jack Nicklaus golf course, weekly ski groups, on-mountain club including parking and locker room at Chateau Deer Valley, cross-country skiing, fine dining, and fitness center. Golf and social memberships available at 649-2460 or on the web.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life. You're listening to KPCW Park City. Time for national news.